Thank you, my brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, thus in the universe family of God, for listening to my podcast, Personal God Consciousness in Jesus and Living Eternal Truths. I am Brother Dave, your host. Please visit my large website, www.purechristians.org, or ledbyjesus.org, same website. You'll find many valuable and comprehensive religious and spiritual resources there. When you get there, scroll about 25% down the homepage, and then you may read, download, and share my always free 100-page PDF of key highlights of my books on the nature, life, and teachings of our Creator, Son of God, and Son of Man, Jesus Christ. If any here wish to receive by email a free copy of the text on our show, comment, ask questions, or receive more free text, just email me, dave@purechristians.org. Freely we have received truth in God's Spirit. Freely we love to share His truth. We hope and pray that you do too. We thank you, our brothers and sisters in the perfecting family of God, of all mankind here on earth. We thank you all for listening. Thank you for your spiritual support. We thank you for sharing gems of truth with others. We have selected verses and paragraphs on this topic from the Christian Bible and from the unique 2,097-page Fifth Epical Revelation of Truth, which is named the Urantia Book. That revelation was given around AD 1935. It's in modern American English, and it allows our seeking minds and souls much joy and enthusiasm as we read these powerful verses. All reflective truth-seeking humans on this planet will find some value from these readings. It's freely available online. There's no copyright because only humans can hold a copyright, and this revelation was given by superhumans, so it's fully in the public domain, and so it allows us to then share portions of it wisely with others. So now we'll continue.
Our podcast is...
Now we continue in the Urantia Book, the last part 4, The Life and Teachings of Jesus, papers 120 through 196. We are continuing in paper 132, The Sojourn at Rome, section 3, Truth and Faith. This is paragraph 1. Nabon was a Greek Jew and foremost among the leaders of the chief mystery cult in Rome, the Mithraic. While this high priest of Mithraicism held many conferences with Jesus, the Damascus scribe, he was most permanently influenced by their discussion of truth and faith one evening. Nabon had thought to make a convert of Jesus and had even suggested that he return to Palestine as a Mithraic teacher. He little realized that Jesus was preparing him to become one of the early converts to the gospel of the kingdom. Restated in modern phraseology, the substance of Jesus' teaching was, truth cannot be defined with words, only by living. Truth is always more than knowledge. Knowledge pertains to things observed, but truth transcends such purely material levels that it consorts with wisdom and embraces such imponderables as human experience, even spiritual and living realities. Knowledge originates in science, wisdom in true philosophy, truth in the religious experience of spiritual living. Knowledge deals with facts, wisdom with relationships, truth with reality values. Man tends to crystallize science, formulate philosophy, and dogmatize truth because he is mentally lazy in adjusting to the progressive struggles of living. He is also terribly afraid of the unknown. Natural man is slow to initiate changes in his habits of thinking and in his techniques of living. Revealed truth, personally discovered truth, is the supreme delight of the human soul. It is a joint creation of the material mind and the indwelling spirit. That's God's pure spirit essence, God's will living within you, living within your mind, and co-creating with your will agreement the higher living soul, you. Reading on, the eternal salvation of this truth-discerning and beauty-loving soul is assured by that hunger and thirst for goodness which leads this mortal to develop a singleness of purpose to do the Father's will, to find God, and to become like Him, to become Godlike. There is never conflict between true knowledge and truth. There may be conflict between knowledge and human beliefs, beliefs colored with prejudice, distorted by fear, and dominated by the dread of facing new facts of material discovery or spiritual progress. But truth can never become man's possession without the exercise of faith. This is true because man's thoughts, wisdom, ethics, and ideals will never rise higher than his faith, his sublime hope. And all such true faith is predicated on profound reflection, sincere self-criticism, and uncompromising moral consciousness. Faith is the inspiration of the spiritized creative imagination. Yes, we do have God-given creative imagination, which we should use wisely to create things that are positive, good, beautiful, true, loving, merciful, ministering to people. Reading on paragraph 6 here, faith acts to release the superhuman activities of the divine spark, the immortal germ that lives within the mind of man. That's the Thought-O-Jester, also known as the Mystery Monitor, and which is the potential of eternal survival. Plants and animals survive in time by the technique of passing on from one generation to another identical particles of themselves. The human soul, personality, of man survives mortal death by identity association with this indwelling spark of divinity, which is immortal, and which functions to perpetuate the human personality upon a continuing and higher level of progressive universe existence. The concealed seed of the human soul is an immortal spirit. That's God's spirit. The second generation of the soul is the first of a succession of personality manifestations of spiritual and progressing existences, terminating only when this divine entity attains the source of its existence, the personal source of all existence, God, the Universal Father. Paragraph 7. Human life continues, survives, because it has a universe function, the task of finding God. The faith-activated soul of man cannot stop short of the attainment of this goal of destiny. When it does once achieve this divine goal, it can never end because it has become like God, eternal. Spiritual evolution is an experience of the increasing and voluntary choice of goodness attended by an equal and progressive diminution of the possibility of evil. With the attainment of finality of choice for goodness and of completed capacity for truth appreciation, there comes into existence a perfection of beauty and holiness whose righteousness eternally inhibits the possibility of the emergence of even the concept of potential evil. Such a God-knowing soul casts no shadow of doubting evil when functioning on such a high spirit level of divine goodness. The presence of the paradise spirit in the mind of man, when they say man, that means all humans, men and women equally, because men and women here, males and females, are both classified as sons of God. The daughters of God are not humans. The daughters of God are the many types of angels. So when it says man and mankind, that always includes equally females and males. The presence of the paradise spirit in the mind of man constitutes the revelation promise and a faith pledge of an eternal existence of divine progression for every soul seeking to achieve identity with this immortal and indwelling spirit fragment of the Universal Father. We have a fragment of infinity within us. What a divine gift. What an eternal gift to us. Paragraph 10. Universe progress is characterized by increasing personality freedom because it is associated with the progressive attainment of higher and higher levels of self-understanding and consequent voluntary self-restraint. The attainment of perfection of spiritual self-restraint equals completeness of universe freedom and personal liberty. Faith fosters and maintains man's soul in the midst of the confusion of his early orientation in such a vast universe, a potentially or actually infinite universe, infinite cosmos. Whereas prayer becomes the great unifier of the various inspirations of the creative imagination and the faith urges of a soul trying to identify itself with the spirit ideals of the indwelling and associated divine presence. And as I've said, that's God's perfect will, your thought adjuster, known also as your mystery monitor, your divine pilot light, your future spirit perfection, many other terms. It's such a high spirit reality that these revelators here say it's difficult to come up with an adequate term. Last paragraph 11 in this section. Nabon was greatly impressed by these words, as he was by each of his talks with Jesus. These truths continued to burn within his heart, and he was of great assistance to the later arriving preachers of Jesus' gospel. Now we go to section 4, personal ministry, paragraph 5. He, that's Jesus, talked with a Roman senator on politics and statesmanship, and this one contact with Jesus made such an impression on this legislator that he spent the rest of his life vainly trying to induce his colleagues to change the course of the ruling policy from the idea of the government supporting and feeding the people to that of the people supporting the government. Jesus spent one evening with a wealthy slaveholder, talked about man as a son of God. And the next day, this man, Claudius, gave freedom to 117 slaves. He visited at dinner with a Greek physician, telling him that his patients had minds and souls as well as bodies, and thus led this able doctor to attempt a more far-reaching ministry to his fellow men. He talked with all sorts of people in every walk of life. The only place in Rome he did not visit was the public baths. He refused to accompany his friends to the baths because of the sex promiscuity which there prevailed. Jesus was and is very moral. He did not do immoral, evil, lustful things, as humans tend to do. We all need to have more self-control. Last paragraph here, paragraph 7. To the speaker at the forum, he, Jesus, said, this is good. Your eloquence is pleasing, your logic is admirable, your voice is pleasant, but your teaching is hardly true. If you could only enjoy the inspiring satisfaction of knowing God as your spiritual father, then you might employ your powers of speech to liberate your fellows from the bondage of darkness and from the slavery of ignorance. This was the Marcus who heard Peter preach in Rome and became his successor. When they crucified Simon Peter, it was this man who defied the Roman persecutors and boldly continued to preach the new gospel. Section 7, Trips About Rome, paragraph 5. Jesus is speaking here to a merchant visiting from India. There were two Indian rich merchants that came to Jerusalem and met Jesus. Jesus never went to India, but he did travel for almost 2 years with these two Indian merchants around the Middle East to Gentile countries. Gonad was the dad, and Gained was the son. Jesus says, "You see, Gonad, Buddha knew God in spirit, but failed clearly to discover him in mind. The Jews discovered God in mind, but largely failed to know him in spirit. Today, the Buddhists flounder about in a philosophy without God, while my people are piteously enslaved to the fear of a God without a saving philosophy of life and liberty. You have a philosophy without a God. The Jews have a God, but are largely without a philosophy of living as related thereto. Buddha, failing to envision God as a spirit and as a father, failed to provide in his teaching the moral energy and the spiritual driving power which a religion must possess if it is to change a race and exalt a nation." Powerful words of truth. Paper 133, The Return from Rome, Section 6 at Ephesus, Discourse on the Soul. Paragraph 4 and 5. There was a progressive thinker connected with his local school of philosophy, and Jesus had several profitable sessions with him. In the course of these talks, Jesus had repeatedly used the word soul. This learned Greek finally asked him what he meant by soul, and he replied, "The soul is the self-reflective, truth-discerning, and spirit-perceiving part of man, which forever elevates the human being above the level of the animal world. Self-consciousness in and of itself is not the soul. Moral self-consciousness is true human self-realization and constitutes the foundation of the human soul. And the soul is that part of man which represents the potential survival value of human experience. Moral choice and spiritual attainment, the ability to know God, and the urge to be like him are the characteristics of the soul. The soul of man cannot exist apart from moral thinking and spiritual activity. A stagnant soul is a dying soul. But the soul of man is distinct from the divine spirit which dwells within the mind. The divine spirit arrives simultaneously with the first moral activity of the human mind, and that is the occasion of the birth of the soul. I add here, on earth today, on average, at about age 5 years and 10 months, is when the human child makes a first moral decision, probably to obey his parents. And then, silently and unknowingly to the child or the parents, in almost all cases, the pure spirit essence of God indwells the mind of that child from that time on as a guide and co-creates with the will of the child when the child is doing something moral or good, true, beautiful, helping people and so on, that the better part of that human is duplicated in a higher reality of you, which is soul. The soul is the better you, just like you, same personality, same spirit, same mind, but it's the better you when you think and do the better choices, more godlike. Now we go to paper 134, the transition years, section 4, sovereignty, divine, and human. These are Jesus' words in modern English. The brotherhood of men is founded on the fatherhood of God. The family of God is derived from the love of God. God is love. But I add, love is not God. Love is a spirit value, which is very high. It's the highest spirit value, but that's almost infinitely lower than the reality of God, the Father, infinite I am. God is the source of these spirit values and of all reality. And you can't just take one part of a reality or one part of a spirit value and say that's God. So God is love, fully true, but love is not God. It's a creation of God who is higher. God the Father divinely loves his children, all of them. Reading on, the kingdom of heaven, the divine government, is founded on the fact of divine sovereignty. God is spirit. Since God is spirit, this kingdom is spiritual. The kingdom of heaven is neither material nor merely intellectual. It is a spiritual relationship between God and man. If different religions recognize the spirit sovereignty of God, the Father, then will all such religions remain at peace. That's very important. Only when one religion assumes that it is in some way superior to all others, and that it possesses exclusive authority over other religions, will such a religion presume to be intolerant of other religions or dare to persecute other religious believers. I know as Christians are very intolerant of even other Christians. Right now there's over 41,000 different Christian churches and denominations and smaller groups, 41,000. And each one says, we have the truth, we know the truth, and all the other people don't know the truth we know, so we got to go and convert them to the truth that we have. Now, people are supposed to be converted directly by God's Spirit living within them and around them. God is the source, true source of all truth and everything else, not mere humans who think they have all the truth. It states in this revelation that it would be good if all religions studied and learned more about all the other religions, and they could come together in unity over what they agree upon, and not over theological divisions. For example, a lot of Christians are divided about whether or not God is one or God is a trinity of three deities. Both are true, but it's hard to comprehend that. And so some people say, oh, God is one. True. Other people say, God is three, Father, Son, and Spirit. True. They're both true. But to understand that is a lifelong study to just begin to understand that complex Trinity unity. This revelation here, the Ranch Book, has much on that. Very advanced. Lifetime of study. If you go to my website, I've covered the Ranch Book now for many years on my website, and there's quite a bit on that with my attempt to explain some of it. That's purechristians.org or ledbyjesus.org. Now we go to paragraph 4. Religious peace, brotherhood, can never exist unless all religions are willing to completely divest themselves of all ecclesiastical authority, all church authority, and fully surrender all concept of spiritual sovereignty. God alone is spirit sovereign. God alone is spirit sovereign. You cannot have equality among religions, religious liberty, without having religious wars, unless all religions consent to the transfer of all religious sovereignty to some superhuman level, to God himself. Not to some preacher or priest or pope, high person or guru or swami, crystal ball reader, fortune tellers, whatever. God and you are directly connected. So let God teach you and guide you directly. Now, churches are good for the social aspects. They can get together and they can, feed and clothe people and do social work. But unfortunately, very few churches teach any spiritual truth. The only exception would be the Quakers or the Friends Church, because there they don't have any preachers or teachers. They sit for an hour and they listen to God directly. And they get their understanding of reality directly from God. Now that's very advanced. But most people are not up to that. They don't want to try to commune with God for a whole hour straight. Maybe 10 seconds or so, or go to church and sleep while somebody teaches you about God that's set, up there in the pulpit as a preacher, yelling and screaming or whatever they do. That's the state of unspirituality here. But God loves us, and God has given us this revelation to help to show us the light of life and the way of truth. And this revelation is doing that. Well, I've studied this now and shared it for 45 years. This Urantia book is a worldwide bestseller now. It's in about 20 different languages translated. And it will be hopefully in 60 languages in the next 10 years or so. That's a pretty fast goal. Maybe they can do that. Now, if you buy a translation, you'll have to pay money for the printed copy. You might be able to get it free online. But the translations, printed ones, are cost you some money. But the Urantia book in English, that's public domain now, no copyright. So you can download the whole book or part of it. You can study, word search it online or on my website. That way you can share these spiritual truths with all other people, close friends, or be a worldwide evangelist and share this widely, whatever you want to do. Now, let's see, paragraph 5. You cannot have equality among religions, religious liberty, without having religious wars, unless all religions consent to the transfer of all religious sovereignty to some superhuman level, to God himself. The kingdom of heaven in the hearts of men will create religious unity, not necessarily uniformity, because any and all religious groups composed of such religious believers will be free from all notions of ecclesiastical authority, religious sovereignty. I add, today, many persons stop church membership and practice personal God consciousness at home and in all other places in their true God-given spiritual liberty. No more, quote, temple tycoons, popes, saints to follow, other than God and Jesus, always one here in spirit, upon and within all normal, moral humans. The Holy Spirit is within all humans, but God and Jesus are only within humans that are slightly moral or better. Paragraph 7. God is spirit, and God gives a fragment of his spirit self to dwell in the heart of man. Spiritually, all men, all humans, are equal. God loves all humans and has a destiny for all humans equally. The kingdom of heaven is free from caste, classes, social levels, and economic groups. You are all brethren. But we're far from that reality now. We have kings and popes and first ladies and upper class and celebrities, and people will listen to a celebrity. It might be a sports figure, a movie or TV celebrity, and they'll listen to them more than they listen to God many times. And then they'll follow the one they like the best. That's the sad state of affairs now. Very few people are directly, personally God conscious. But we are progressing. That's God's will, that mankind perfect, and each and every day a few more people become directly, spiritually God conscious. Reading on, but the moment you lose sight of the spirit sovereignty of God the Father, some one religion will begin to assert its superiority over other religions. And then, instead of peace on earth and goodwill among men, there will start dissensions, recriminations, even religious wars, at least wars among religionists. Free will beings who regard themselves as equals unless they mutually acknowledge themselves as subject to some super sovereignty, some authority over and above themselves, sooner or later attempted to try out their ability to gain power and authority over other persons and groups. The concept of equality never brings peace except in the mutual recognition of some over-controlling influence of super-sovereignty. The Urmia religionists lived together in comparative peace and tranquility because they had fully surrendered all their notions of religious sovereignty. Spiritually, they all believed in a sovereign God. Socially, full and unchangeable authority rested in their presiding head, Symbiotin. They well knew what would happen to any teacher who assumed to lord it over his fellow teachers. There can be no lasting religious peace on earth, that's Urantia, earth, until all religious groups freely surrender all their notions of divine favor, chosen people, and religious sovereignty. Only when God the Father becomes supreme will man become religious brothers and live together in religious peace on earth. Section 5, Political Sovereignty, paragraph 2 and 14. War on Urantia, earth, will never end so long as nations cling to the elusive notions of unlimited national sovereignty. There are only two levels of relative sovereignty on an inhabited world, the spiritual free will of the individual mortal and the collective sovereignty of mankind as a whole. Between the level of the individual human being and the level of the total mankind, all groupings and associations are relative, transitory, and of value only insofar as they enhance the welfare, well-being, and progress of the individual and the planetary grand total, man and mankind. These 48 states, that's as of year AD 1935, having abandoned the twin sophistries of sovereignty and self-determination, enjoy interstate peace and tranquility. So will the nations of Urantia begin to enjoy peace when they freely surrender their respective sovereignties into the hands of a global government, the sovereignty of the Brotherhood of Men. Now, you have to be cautious here, because that's not the United Nations. That's not sovereignty of mankind under God. They're too materialistic, too secular humanist, and they have liberal ideas that are not God's will at all. And so you can't think that the United Nations, as comprised now, is a true world government. Sovereignty is far from it. But maybe in 300, 400, 500 years, we might get to that level. But it has to be everything according to God and Jesus Christ. If the government is not following God and Jesus Christ, you're going to be misled. Eventually, the whole world will be Christian or a modified Christian of some type. They'll go by many different names. But they'll all love and follow the life and teachings of Jesus. That's coming. That's the only way we can be absolutely unified. Even though they may call themselves other religions. Continuing on here. In this world state, the small nations will be as powerful as the great, even as the small state of Rhode Island has its two senators in the American Congress, just the same as the populous state of New York or the large state of Texas. I add, global government will never work until the dictator, communist, atheist nation states are all removed. That is starting to now happen. Section 6, Law, Liberty, and Sovereignty, paragraph 1, 5, 9, 10, and 15. This will be the last section we'll read here. If one man craves freedom, liberty, he must remember that all other men long for the same freedom. Groups of such liberty-loving mortals cannot live together in peace without becoming subservient to such laws, rules, and regulations as will grant each person the same degree of freedom, while at the same time safeguarding an equal degree of freedom for all of his fellow mortals. If one man is to be absolutely free, then another must become an absolute slave. And the relative nature of freedom is true socially, economically, and politically. Freedom is the gift of civilization made possible by the enforcement of law. It has to be law, rules, and regulations. Anarchy will not work. The 48 American free states live together in peace. There are among the citizens of these 48 states all the various nationalities and races that live in the ever-warring nations of Europe, and even now around the world. These Americans represent almost all the religions and religious sects and cults of the whole wide world. Yet, here in North America, they live together in peace. All this is made possible because the 48 states have surrendered their sovereignty and have abandoned all notions of the supposed rights of self-determination. World peace cannot be maintained by treaties, diplomacy, foreign policies, alliances, balances of power, or any other type of makeshift juggling with the sovereignties of nationalism. World law must come into being and must be enforced by world government, the sovereignty of all mankind. But not the way the United Nations is now, sovereignty of a few elite people, not all mankind. Big difference. The individual will enjoy far more liberty under, and that's godly, not secular, I add, world government. Today, the citizens of the great powers are taxed, regulated, and controlled almost oppressively. Much of this present interference with individual liberties will vanish when the national governments are willing to trustee their sovereignty as regards international affairs into the hands of global government. That's the government of all mankind, by all mankind, and for all mankind. Something coming in the future. Samboyton's eldest son had appealed to Abner at Philadelphia for help, but Abner's choice of teachers was most unfortunate, and they turned out to be unyielding and uncompromising. These teachers sought to make their religion dominant over the other beliefs. They never suspected that the oft-referred to lectures of the caravan conductor had been delivered by Jesus himself. Okay, that's enough for this section. We will continue in about 2 weeks. And rather than say goodbye, I'd like to say farewell, do well.